The topic we're going to do today is the Rambam Shita on Bal Yirah, Bal Yimatzeh. I think that this is a really good, you know, mahalach from Rav Rosenzweig. It's once we put it all together, you'll see. Hopefully, it's pretty clear. And I know it's a good one. You know, as Pesach's coming in a couple of days, a couple of days from now, it'll be good. You know, you can give it as a shiur in your shul if you want or something. Say at the Seder table. So it's a good timing. And as you always do, I try to present the shiur or organize the shiur with a guiding question. So for this shiur, the guiding question I had is, what is the relationship between the Isser of Bal Yira'eh and the Isser of Bal Yimatzeh? And really what we're asking is, are the nature of each of these Yisurim different? That's kind of the question we're addressing and we've been addressing in shiur. With regards to the Rambam, it's a little more explicit, but really that's what's been going on, you know, the last six or seven shiurim is really around this topic, even though it's been a little over the place recently. And so we're going to focus on the sheet of the Rambam in the shiur. At some later point, either I or someone else will give a chazara shiur examining the larger, broader landscape of approaches. And also today, I'll try to do this a little more quickly without going through as many of the sources inside, just to, I know everyone's got to prepare for Pesach. So I want to break up the shiur into four sections. The first is to give some background. The second is to present some problems in the Rambam. Section 3A will be giving the resolving the Rambam and working back through the issues. And 3B will be trying to really understand what we're saying when we give our resolution for the Rambam, to give some time to it. And the last section is a postscript about the related Makos issues. And we'll explain that when you get to it later. So let's begin with section one. So the Gemara the Torah in several places presents, in Shmos and elsewhere, presents the prohibition of Chametz and Seor. And the Gemara in Pesachim addresses these two prohibitions the Torah presents of Bal Yirah and Bal Yimatzeh. And the Gemara in Pesachim basically starts off by presenting Bal Yirah and Bal Yimatzeh as independent ideas with different dinim. The mitzvah Bal Yirah would be pater on tamon and for chametz acher megavoa b'chaya begvulin. And there's reasons within the psukim how they're formulated for why you get there. The mitzvah Bal Yimatzeh would be chaya for tamon and chametz acher and pater begvulin. And the Gemara, after explaining these differences, the Gemara says that we use gzeira shava to connect Bal Yirah and Bal Yimatzeh. So that's the Gemara's besides the Tamasor Sor the Gzera Shava. And that's the Psachim Heyam and Beis. So you have this Gzera Shava, and this is Seor, and this is how we get this idea that really the two of them are connected by Yirah and Bal Yimatzeh. And basically, initially, we were going to say that the Gemara presents them as two independent mechayvim, but the maskana is that really there's one broader mechayv, a relationship of chametz. That's a simple reading of this Gemara. Now, what's underlying this entire Gemara is the following issue, which is that the Torah has so many psukim about seemingly this basic prohibition of this prohibition of not having chametz. The Torah presents numerous psukim in this regard. And so what do you do when you have numerous psukim? And this is the issue the Rambam and all the other commentaries have to deal with, which is, what do you do when there's so many psukim? And that's what the Gemara is really addressing, right? And sometimes when you have numerous psukim, it's to try to present how there's really different details of a certain law or mitzvah, and it's coming to incorporate those together. That's sort of one way of looking at numerous psukim, right? And, you know, it's one idea, and for whatever reason, there could be numerous reasons for it to show that there's multi-themed idea. It could be, you know, multi-dimensional, but the idea is that the Torah is giving us numerous psukim because it's one idea, and it's trying to give us the requisite knowledge for how to apply Bal Yirah and Bal Yimatzeh. That's the first way you can kind of understand numerous psukim. A second way, just in general understanding, is that when you have multiple psukim, you know, they represent different themes. So you have one pasuk is for a theme A and one, two, and pasuk B for a different theme. You know, this comes up all the time when you're darshanim psukim. It's a little bit, you know, a little bit different, but you know, you have the p'tur of osei b'mitzvah, and then the Torah presents the p'tur of chasan. So the question is, like, are those two different things? Is it saying, no, I'm incorporating one into the other category? Are they two different motifs? That's just an example, but you always have this dilemma. And so once you have these different themes, then the question is, are they two different mitzvos? Have they got different onshim? Are they nafkamino? So then you have to try to figure out these different mechayvim, how they all relate. So that's just a general conceptual issue. We also know that the Rambam Shita here, this is just a one more prefatory note. Also know the Rambam Shita is very, the Rambam has very strong Shitos on Bali Ra and Bali Matze, and like that sort of underlies our entire discussion of the Rambam's opinion here, which is like we know that the Rambam we've seen in general when Bali Ra and Bali Matze starts, at what point, and so it's kind of all of this is sort of loaded. When we come into it, right? Chametz in the Pesach, we have the Tarovas Chametz. The Rambam Shita is very loaded. So when you come into this, it's not just coming in blind. We know the Rambam is very intense about Bali Rai Bali Matzeh, and then what makes it, what he says here even more telling. So that's the first section. Please pop in with any questions or anything if you'd like at any point. So now we're going to move on to the second section, and I'd like to lay out for you here six different issues with the Rambam's opinion. They're not necessarily, you know, we'll call them challenges. But I'm going to try to present to you how there's six problems in the Rambam as a whole here regarding Bali Ra and Bali Matzeh. And so the first issue is the following. The Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos, Mitzvah Reish, Mitzvah Lo Ta'aseh Reish, and Mitzvah Lo Ta'aseh Reish Aleph presents mitzvahs of not having chametz on Pesach, or related to not having chametz on Pesach. Mitzvah Lo Ta'aseh Reish, and then he quotes, and he says that they're one inyan, but here the Rambam presents the violation of Lo Yirah. And in Reish Aleph, as we know, he says, and what's the pasuk? Lo Yimatze Bevatechem. So here the Rambam presents Lo Yimatze and Lo Yirah as two separate prohibitions. Moreover, the Rambam doesn't just do this in Sefer HaMitzvot. The Rambam in the Koteret says, Rambam in the Koteret, Hilchos Chametz U'Matzah says, Shelo Yireh Chametz Kol Sheva. That's the fifth mitzvah. Sixth mitzvah, Shelo Yimatzeh Chametz Kol Sheva. The Rambam is consistent that there's numerous mitzvos. The two of them are separate, separate lavin. And the question that we have to deal with is that the Rambam in general is sort of very hesitant to count two separate lavin. Unless there's, you know, clearly a nafkamina and there's clearly different onshim. And that's the Rambam Shita in general. And when you go to Shorash Ket, the Shorashim for the Sefer HaMitzvos are fascinating because, you know, how you choose to count mitzvos is such a dilemma. And all the Monad mitzvos do incredible jobs trying to figure that out. And you know, like Reuchim Fishel Perlau is just this unbelievable work on Sefer HaMitzvos and all these. And Rosenzweig always disagrees with him. Rosenzweig as a klal always picks on Reuchim Fishel Perlau and always picks on the Menchas Chinuch. Like, you know, if he's going to bring something up from them, it's always to disagree with them. I'm being a little dramatic, but not so much. But the Rambam in general says that there, if there's two separate inyanim, you know, two different mechayvim, there's maybe nafkamina. He talks about makos at the end. Then maybe you'll have two different lavin. But he goes on a whole rant, and you read Shoresh Teh, he goes on a whole rant against like when, not counting two lavin unnecessarily, right? If it's only lechizuk or lehash lemidine amitzvos, shalim din medinim b'mitzvah acheres, right? Then you only count one of the lavin. And that's the Rambam's general principle, right? That you really don't count the second lavin unless it really adds substance and not just a lav yisera. Now the Rambam at the end says something about mako, about requiring a different mako, and that be a way of maybe a heuristic for where you know that there's two different lavin, or they're warranted to be counted as two different lavin. The Ramban attacks him for this. That's important. That we'll get back to later. But just broadly speaking, the Rambam is very against counting two lavin if you're gonna In the end, you're chayav bali roi bali matzeh always at the same time together. So why do you need two different lavim for that if they're essentially the same thing at this point because of the gzeira shava? So what's the Rambam doing here? Yeah, and so this is clearly a surprise. And like we have, you know, we talked about Tumura, how Tumura seems to be the opposite. The Rambam only counts one, even though there's two different psukim for it. We're not going to get into that. Those who were here last year, you know, understand the reference probably a little better. So it's a clear exception to Shoresh Tet that Rosenzweig said, right? The Gemara, yeah, I mean, also just this is an important point. The Rambam also elsewhere does this in Dalet Beis. Add that to before, the Rambam says you violate both Bali Ram and Bali Matzeh there at the same time if you hit Chametz in your house. So, right, and if there's no Nafkamina between the two, how can they be two different Mechayvim? I thought a good opinion here to bring up that highlights the tension and like in general, this is something Rav Rosenzweig likes to do, which is that the other Shitot here just highlight the. It's not so much he agrees with their conclusions, but their what they are saying, the Nosei Kalim, highlights the tension in the Rambam. He loves to do that with the various Nosei Kalim. So, and even if he thinks their ideas sort of go astray, they're very telling. So the Kesef Mishnah thought that, and Kesef Mishnah is basically bothered by this issue, just how can the Rambam count two things? Right? If they're the same, you know, how can the Rambam count it both? So what does the Kesef Mishnah answer? That the Rambam is saying is not that you always violate both, but in a situation where you have both conditions to violate both, then you're over on Shnei Lavin. But it's not inherent that you violate both when you violate any one of the two. It's not true. And the Gemara is saying that there's overlap. You're allowed to have overlap between the two dinim with the Gzeira Shava. It was a little shver of a reading of the Gemara, right? But it doesn't mean that the dinim apply to both. And so the problem with this is it doesn't read well in the Gemara. But the idea of the Kesef Mishnah, which he's picking up on, is it's really tough to understand why the Rambam counts two different lavin. Right? Well, how could the Rambam do that? It doesn't make sense according to Shoresh Tet. So he gives his explanation. Right? The Kesef Mishnah's explanation is that no, Rambam's really not saying that. Only when the two actually overlap, then you can violate both. But really, there are cases where you only violate one of the two. As Kesef Mishnah, I think either Aleph Beis or Aleph Gimel. Now, on the other side of it, and this is the second issue in the Rambam, if you're going to start violating the principles in Shoresh Tet, so why do you only count two lavin? I mean, if you're going to already say that, no, we go based on like the amount of psukim and you know, all these formulations in the psukim, then why do we just count? Why don't we just count more than two lavin? And so on the one hand, and just this could, I guess, go with problem one, the Re'im, the Hagsagas HaRe'im basically says pretty explicitly that he says V'yeshlit Moa on the Rambam, that the Rambam says that you only, and this is the great, is a very explicit way of capturing the question on the Rambam, which is the Rambam says, you know, only when you get two different makos for it, it says even though they're the same, he says they should be Inyan Shneim Echad Hu, if they're both the same, then why do you get two makos according to the Rambam? That's, I mean, the question is, why doesn't the Rambam just count one? That's related to issue number one. But the Kesef Mishnah and the Lecha Mishnah go the other way. I mean, because the Smak and the Urayim say that you count three. Right? And so the Kesef Mishnah says, why don't you just count three? Right? If you're, you know, and based on the Pesukim, so, or how you work that out. And the Lecha Mishnah says, why don't you just count four? Yeah, this is right, Lecha Mishnah, Perek Aleph. He says, Seor, lo yimasei, lo yirelecha seor, lo yirelecha chametz. There's four. Lo yirelecha seor, achrina. You have this over and over again. So why don't we just do it four times if the Rambam is going to start violating these rules? So this is the issue that the Nosei Kalim have with the Rambam. Right, why not three or four if you're going to start violating these rules? Okay. That's issue number two. Issue number three. So the Rambam in Perek Dalid, halacha aleph, halacha beis, essentially revisits the Gemara's Havaminas and Drasho. Now, if you're a concise Sefer Halacha, and the Rambam, usually is presenting us with the final law, and that's what makes the Rambam so exciting for commentaries, especially for Brisk. We're trying to figure out how did the Rambam get there and what conceptual understanding led the Rambam to his final opinion. Right, when the Rambam doesn't present sources, which is a critique of the Rambam, and the Rambam doesn't present sources, then how does the Rambam get to his final conclusion? And usually we're left in the dark about that, but intentionally, right, that the Rambam doesn't do that because that's not the purpose of his work. But here in Halacha, in Perek Da'alet, Halacha Aleph and Halacha Beis, right, the Rambam diverges from this general rule. Right, and the Rambam basically records the Shakla Vitaria. So I'm not going to read it inside, but the Rambam goes through these different cases. There's a little bit of a difference with the Pikadon case, but I think Avraham Sadeh is trying to make something more out of it. I'm not so convinced about it. But the Rambam says, if you were Tamun or Hifkir Oso Biagoyim, Lo Ye Over, maybe you wouldn't be over. And Bali Rai says, Tamalomar Sorli Masiv Batecha. I mean, I'm not going to read it together. We're not going to read it inside, but the Rambam goes through all these drashot together. And the question is, why does the Rambam feel the need to record the Shakla Vitaria? The Gemara here, totally against his general approach, to codifying halakha. That's issue number three. Issue number four. The Rambam in Halakha Aleph Beis. So I have a source sheet here. So the Rambam in Halakha Aleph Beis makes a very clear distinction between Sa'or and Chametz in contrast to Bali Ra'am Bali Matzeh. The Rambam says, "Be'isra Chametz ve'isra Sa'or shibo mechamsin echad hu." In contrast to what he says before, "Afa pishlo achlu over b'shnei lavin shemar lo yalecha Sa'or b'chol gvlecha v'nemar Sa'or lo yimatzeh v'atechem." And then the Rambam says that line, right, that he says, Chametz and Isra Sa'or are one inyan. So the Rambam, aside from saying that there's two different lavin for Bali Ra'am Bali Matzeh, the Rambam is intentionally going out of his way to contrast Se'or and Chametz with Bali Ra'am Bali Matzeh. A, why does the Rambam actually feel the need to do that and to say that the Isser is Echad Hu? And also, why is that the case? Meaning, this kind of relates to the earlier question, which is, A, why does he go out of his way to do it? But B, why is that actually the case? Why don't we say that they're two separate lavin? By way of contrast, the Ravid really attacks the Rambam here because he thinks there really are two separate things. How the Rambam deals with that is an interesting question. But it'd be fascinating if there's a nafka mina between Sa'or and Chametz, and the Rambam doesn't count it as two lavin, and he does count Bali Ra'am Bali Matzeh as two lavin. But we'll leave that aside for now. That's the fourth issue. The fifth issue is the Gemara seems to be very clear from the Gzeirah Shavah that there ends up being no difference between Bali Ra'am Bali Matzeh. That's the Pashas reading of the Gemara. And so the simple issue, which is aside from how we read the Rambam, aside from all that, what do you do with the Gzeirah Shavah? You know, the Rambam has to re-understand the Gzeirah Shavah in some way. Okay, and that we'll have to figure out how exactly does the Rambam do that. You know, aside from, okay, how does the Rambam deal with Shoresh Tet? And how does the Rambam with his own internal things? How does the Rambam just deal with the Gzeirah Shavah in the Gemara? How does he understand it? And the sixth issue is that the Rambam in Perek Aleph, Halacha Gimel, says that in a lokem mishum lo yirav lo yimatzei, ela im kein kana chametz pesach chimso kedesh yase bo maisa. And then he talks about ina over shilavin, and if you don't do a maisa, you just get makas margas. Now the question is, what's the kasha in the Rambam? We'll ask Avi Roth. What's the question we're trying to figure out within the Rambam here? About not like the broader question, just like a very pshat reading of the Rambam. What does the Rambam think about getting makos for Bali Ra'am Bali Matzeh?
Sounds like you get both. You get two sides.
Right. So it sounds like it's kind of unclear in the Rambam, and Shkoyach, I'm picking up on the issue, which is it's kind of unclear in the Rambam whether you get two sets of makos or you just get one. Because the Rambam does say very clearly, as Avi's pointing out, that ein lokem mishum lo yirav v'lo yimatzeh. So does ein lokem mishum lo yirav v'lo yimatzeh mean you don't get one set of lashes for lo yirav and lo yimatzeh because they're conjoined lav? Or is the Rambam saying you don't get makos for lo yirav, one lav, and you don't get makos for lo yimatzeh as well, so there'd be 80 lashes? That's unclear in the Rambam. We're going to get back to that later in the postscript section. But regardless, there is a debate about whether or not the Rambam actually holds two or one. There's debate between much earlier commentaries, but we'll say Rosenzweig thinks that it means two. And the Kasa Mishnah, and we thinks that the Smag and the Rambam, I think, only hold one. And there are also other Shito that believe, if you look, that believe the Rambam only holds, you get one set of Makos for Bayra, Bayra Matzeh. I think maybe the Evan Ezel, I'm not sure, but there are other Shito also. So we have this debate about whether it's two or one. Now put aside the two option. Forget the two option for a second. Let's say the option that it's one. So if we hold it's one, which is a legitimate view in the Rishonim, let's say it's not really a view in the Rishonim necessarily. It's a legitimate view in the commentaries on the Rambam. So what do you do here? Meaning, if the Rambam is the one who's saying over and over again that lo yirav, lo yimatzeh, lo yirav, lo yimatzeh are two separate prohibitions, there's two lavin, how could you possibly think that the Rambam is going to say that there's one set of mako for both? And just to add to it, I was looking into this a little bit last night more. From elsewhere in the Rambam, it does sound more like it's one set of makos, potentially. It does sound like that more. Yeah, and the same answer is Reish. He would have been maybe more clear about whether or not you get two sets of makos there. And in the Hilchos Sanhedrin, Yitzhak Dalid, the Rambam, I think it's Yitzhak Dalid. So let me just get it. Yeah, the Rambam says, "Din shalokin alav ksachav elu hein." So he talks about the dinim that you get makos for. He says, "Makayim chametz drishuso ukugon shechimetz isaso." There, the Rambam only says one. Right. So the question is whether the Rambam is saying, the Rambam is not delineating exactly how many makos you get from these. He's just saying, as a category, if you do these things, you get makos. But there does seem to be indications that the Rambam holds one. That's the point I'm trying to make. So if the Rambam holds one, that's sensational. What do you do with that Rambam? Yeah, Akiva, please.
Why? How did Reish imply that he only holds one?
I think the point is that the Rambam would think he'd expound on that a little more. No.
Reish Aleph is the other lav. So he, meaning it says that there's one Malkus for Reish and one Malkus for Reish Aleph.
Exactly. Let me take a look. Because the Rambam here, at the end of it, says she hamakayim chametz to Pesach over b'shnei lavin, right? Which we note is an important point. Where does the Rambam say? So where in Reish Aleph does he say that you get Malkus? I thought the point was that in Reish he says you get in Reish you get makos. He doesn't say that you get makos independently for both of them, and that's no. He does say in Reish Aleph here. So is that Gamkin Lokan Alav? Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. Okay. I retract the point. I missed that line in the Rambam. I retract the point. Yeah. I'm not sure about that. Anybody have any thoughts? I'm not sure about that Reish Aleph point. Okay, I'm gonna hold off on that. I have a good point, Akiva. Thank you. But it does sound that Sanhedrin, you agree with me about Sanhedrin, Yotet, that's like the Rambam is not clear anywhere that you get makos for both. I think at the very least we can agree on that. Question is whether the Rambam is just like not, these aren't the places to do it, but nowhere does the Rambam say very explicitly that you get makos for both. I think that's fair enough. So here we present the six different issues in the Rambam. Right, I think Seth hopefully will agree with me that there's a six issues, we're overcounting, we're undercounting. What do we do with all these issues in the Rambam? So I'm trying to gather all the information from Shir together, trying to put it in an organized way. So now here, unless there's any questions, here we'll move on to try to figure out how to resolve these issues in the Rambam. Yeah, Avi.
Yeah, I think I missed one of the questions, either three or four.
Yeah, so let me briefly review them. So question number one is about the issue with Shoresh Tet. The second is the sort of the flip side of that, which is if Rambam's breaking the rules in Shoresh Tet, why not three or four? The third is the gratuitous reference to the Havamino in the Drasha and the Gemara. That's Rambam says that in Dalet Aleph, Dalet Beis, and Hilchos Chametz Matzah. Why does Rambam need to go through all the Shaka Vataria? The fourth is the Rambam's peculiar contrast to Seor and Chametz. Why does the Rambam need to say that? A, why does Rambam feel the need to specifically articulate that? And B, why doesn't he think that there's two for those? The fifth is that how does the Rambam actually understand the Gzeirah Shavah? Meaning, forgetting the internal rules in the Rambam, how does the Rambam just understand the Gzeirah Shavah in the Gemara? And the sixth is the Rambam, according to the view within the Rambam, a legitimate view, there seems to be evidence for it, that it's really only one set of makos. How could that possibly be? How is that conceivable, that there's one set of makos if they think there's two different lavin? Okay, good. So now we're on to section number three. So we'll try to break this up into two parts. I'm going to say it the way Rosenthal is presenting it, and then we'll go a step further, hopefully. So how do we resolve the issues in the Rambam of the sort of these two separate lavin and all these different questions we raised? So I think the way you have to read the Gemara is that Bali Roy and Bali Matze represent two different mechayvin. And initially, the Gemara is saying that the mechayvim are completely independent of each other. That's the initial thing. And there would be nafka mino between the two of them. But what are the, and then what these, what the Gezeirah Shavah comes to tell us, and we'll return to the Gezeirah Shavah, is that it's not saying that these two, the mechayvim, the basis of why these would be chayav, end up being identical. It's that they're supposed to be seen and understood in light of each other. Now, in the end, they're both going to be chayav for one because of the other, because they're seeing them in light of each other as in the end. And so, and I think the way of Rosenthal likes to put it, which is that when we define Lo Yuraya, we need to also think about Lo Yumatze, and when we define Lo Yumatze, we also need to be thinking about the definition of Lo Yuraya. I mean, the two become intertwined. And so there, it's not that there aren't two different mechayvim, it's that there are two different mechayvim, but in the Maskana, there seem to be as unified sort of mechayvim, because one impacts the other. Okay? That's the idea of Rosenthal is trying to present. We'll go a step further in section 3a. So in so let's return, let's go back to, try to be clear, let's go back to the six different issues we raised with this idea, and we'll rehash them. Right? So this is, again, you have to look in the Rambam a little more closely to see this, but the point of Rosenthal is trying to make, and he thinks the point that the Ramban understood is misunderstood, is that the Rambam actually never says there needs to be a nafkamina for two different mitzvos. Unless Man de Polig, except for me, the Kesef Mishnah, that the Rambam doesn't think that there is a nafkamina between these Bali Ram and Bali Matze. But the Rambam does believe that as long as it adds substance, the other lav, then it can be counted as a different mitzvah. And so here, since there are two different conceptual ideas, two different mechayvim, Bali Ram and Bali Matze, there can be two different mitzvos. Yeah. Now, yeah. So that's the... basically, just to, I'll put it, you know, succinctly, they're still independent at some level, even though they're intertwined. That's a good way of putting it. I like the alliteration: independent but intertwined. Okay, good.
How are they independent?
They're independent in the sense that the mechayev, the basis for them, is different. We're going to get into what exactly that means. That sounds like.
But why do you not need an afkamina to say that?
What?
How could you say that without an afkamina?
No, because I think that the reason why you're chayav in Bali Ra'a sometimes is because you have Bali Matze. And the reason why you're chayav in Bali Matze sometimes could be because of Bali Ra'a, or because Bali Ra'a limits Bali Matze in theory. And the idea there is that you need both because they're actually substantively impacting the other in terms of like the scope, the breadth of the chayav. I mean, they're actually adding, now they become the same idea, but no, each of these ideas actually still has an impact in the way it impacts the other. That's why both of them are necessary. One of the problems with Brisk is that, and this is something Rosh Lichtenstein kind of presents a very stark example of in his article of what hath Brisk wrought. So he talks about how Brisk is sometimes like you have these ideas and you have like these concepts and words that kind of like sound, oh yeah, like this is a din in X, this is a din in Y, like great, but what exactly does that mean? So sometimes you have to try to pin these down a little more, which is what we'll do. But for now, we'll try to use the more classic terminology. There's different mechayvim that impact each other, and that's why we need both. So that's the first issue that we resolved, right? It's against the Ramban. It's you don't need makos, you don't need an afkamina, you just need to add substance. And that's why Rambam is justified in counting them separately. Good. Now the next point though is that So now let's get to the second issue, which is that the Rambam, if you're going to break Shoresh Tet, right, why doesn't the Rambam count three or four? And the point is that, and the answer sort of becomes very obvious. Because if Davka, it's not that the Rambam is just saying, oh, okay, because it says a pasuk here and a pasuk there, then we're going to count these. No, it's dafka, these two mechayvim, because on some level they're still independent. And what the Rambam is saying is that it's not that oh, we count every time there's two psukim. No, of course not. That's not what the Rambam is saying. It's that despite being always kind of overlapping, they remain independent, and that's very different than just counting the number of psukim, like the Kesef Mishnah says or the Lacha Mishnah suggests. The third issue, which is why does the Rambam quote the Shaka Vitaria in Dalet Aleph and Dalet Beis with some variations, but why does the Rambam quote that? And the way Rav Rosenzweig explained it is that it's conceptually these Havaminas and these Drashot and the Gemara highlight the nature of the different Mechayvim. And the Rambam's point is that when he's still going to say, group them together, he says you violate by rabbi, must say together at the end of Dalet Beis, that the point of these psukim in the Torah and the point of this Gemara and the Havaminas is that it's trying to say how these mechayvim, the nature of these two, are different, and even the end that they overlap. The Rambam is highlighting that those Havaminas were really critical when you thought they were two completely independent mechayvim, because those Havaminas are still retained on some level of maskana; they're not rejected. Yes, they are. Yes, they're always going to violate Ba'ira when you violate Ba'ira Matzeh and the reverse. But the notion that those Havaminos present and the idea of having numerous psukim is really important, because it underscores that the nature of these two, the Machayev of Ba'ira and Ba'ira Matzeh, are actually still different. Although that they're connected and they impact each other in the end. And so that's what the Rambam's doing by quoting these Havaminos, because the Havaminos are very telling about the nature of the law. I'll give you one other example in the Rambam about this. The Rambam, when he talks about Kinyan Sudar, has this like passing. It's like sort of the easiest type of Kinyan. The Rambam quotes a Narishkeit Minhag from the Olam that's not actually effective as a Kinyan Sudar. And the question is, why does the Rambam do this? What's the Rambam doing quoting a Minhag that doesn't make any, that's just wrong. It's not the place to quote everything that's wrong. The Mishnah Torah is telling you what you're supposed to do. And so the way Rosenzweig explained that is because the Rambam's telling you that even though Lamaisa, this is wrong, and it's not actually what we do, it's still very telling, this Minhag, because Sudar is all about Kinyan Das and so on and so forth. Basically, when the Rambam adds in different things, it's for the purpose of telling you about the nature of the law. And so here, that's exactly what the Rambam's doing, is to highlight that the nature of these two different obligations are different. And even though it's rejected, the maskana, that they're completely independent, but it still has an impact on the final law. And that's why they're two different lavim. The fourth issue we raised was Sa'or and Chametz are unlike Ba'ira and Ba'ira Matzeh. So I think the way we tried to explain it is that even though I'm presenting them as a unit, Ba'ira and Ba'ira Matzeh, I'm still counting them separately. And Sa'or and Chametz, though, it's not just that, again, we're counting two things, because it says in the Pasuk, and no, because their Ba'ira and Matzeh are unified but not fully integrated. They're intertwined, they're not independent, but they're intertwined, but they're not fully integrated at the same time. And so since that, it's not just the Rambam is willing to count, flyim every time there's different psukim, but the mechayvim are still unique, and therefore it's a contrast to Sa'or and Chametz. And the Rambam, I think Rosenzweig even says the Rambam is sort of implicitly responding to the Kesef Mishnah and Lecha Mishnah by saying this. He's intentionally making this point to try to say, don't think that I'm counting these two because I just count psukim. No, dafka not. Yeah, Kiva.
So I think I understood, but why did the Rambam choose those specific that specific example as a foil? There are plenty of examples where the psukim are the concept is repeated twice, but it's one lot.
Yeah, I think the answer is because here the Rambam's in Hilchos Chametz Umatzah, so the Rambam's dafka dealing with these very issues here. I mean, if we're talking in the Shorashim, that'd be totally different. Your point would be very well taken, but here we're talking within Chametz Umatzah, the psukim themselves address Le'iraya with Sa'or and with Chametz, and Lo Yumatzah with Sa'or and Chametz. So I think that here it makes total sense why he's specifically choosing those examples. It's not, it's Tilchos Chametz Umatzah, and within those psukim, that's what that's the issue you're dealing with. And for the Ravid, you have to figure out how exactly to deal with the Ravid. But Ravishita, maybe that's for the next Lazara share. The fifth issue we said is, how does Rambam explain the Gzeira Shava? And I thought that this was a good idea also, which is that the Gzeira Shava, we, in a typical reading of Gzeira Shava, is saying, really in the end they're the same. Or they're now, no, really they're the same Machayav, there's overlap. But what we're concluding is that no, the Gzeira Shava is not telling you that they're completely the same, but that they're intertwined, yet retain some independency. Now, six is a classic of Rosenzweig move. This is a classic one. So Rosenzweig, one of the genius parts of his methodology is that Rosenzweig is astounding in the way he's able to work out different conceptual models. And I think most significantly is that he's able to kind of see, but even if you say this, that they could still say this and that would still work and so on and so forth. And just the remarkable range of ideas that he's able to present and how, you think these concepts don't work together, but really you could say that. It kind of it messes up the classic Shiurim where you have here's two conceptual ideas and here's six Nafkamino, because, really these Nafkamino could go the other way as well. They're more likely to go this way. So everyone's very good at that. Sometimes though, it seems like a little, you have to figure out whether you find it compelling or not. But here, if we set the sixth issue, is that according to the views where it's one mach, where you only get one set of machos, it's two lavim, you got one set of machos, how could that possibly be? What could you say? So the reference I was trying to argue is that while we're trying to highlight the differences between them still, and for the Rambam, clearly those differences are important and significant, right? We're trying to highlight them, but at the same time, they're still integrated and unified in some way. And therefore, they're not distinct enough to make them two different types of makos, two different sets of makos. And I think that's really, sort of like the whole point is that the Rambam is saying that they're unified, they're intertwined, but not completely the same. But there's also the flip side that they are intertwined. And so here you see this sort of this dialectic. I think that's a good way of putting it. Sort of as dialectic in the Rambam. And here it's actually assisting us in capturing that dialectic if it's only one set of makos. Okay, good. That's how we resolve the six issues in the Rambam. But now I want to get to, I think, is pinning it down a little bit more, which is that the Rambam, what exactly do we mean when we say that there's two different machayvim? And here's where I want to try to be clear. Please correct me if you think differently. So what are exactly these two different chiyuvim from mechayvim? So I think the way we're trying to put it, we put it at various points, is that, Kareen, your internet's really shvach, man. what are these? So vayiroe is about your personal subjective relationship to the chametz, whereas vayimatze is about the more formal, legal, objective ownership. That's what we're trying to say with these two different mechayvim. Now, and I think how you view it, the Bali Matze, it'll be about the more about your domain. I thought that was a good word. And it's about having a chametz-free domain on Pesach. And so now with that being said, of course, what's the common denominator? Is that having a connection with chametz is usher because of chumras chametz. Let me put it better. Having connection with the chametz is aser, and that's what unifies them, and that's what the overlap is. But we sort of, and I think this is a good way of thinking about it, because of the chumar of chametz and how significant and toxic it is, we zero in on the two different sort of different aspects of a way of relating to chametz. But we went a step further than this, right? Hopefully this is helping out with understanding sort of the tam for these two different machayvim. But we also went a step further than this, right? Which is not just that, there's different conceptual natures, but really that the two impact each other. And hopefully this will help articulate this point. But that really that you need one because the other impacts the other in a substantive way and the other in the reverse. So let's just give one example of this. So I think that probably the best example of this would be the issue of Tamun. Right? If a person hides the chametz, you can't see it. So the Gemara suggests that you wouldn't violate Bayiroa for that. So now the Gzeira Sheva says that in the end, you do violate Bayiroa for that. So how, what, now what we're trying to say is that's because Bali Matse impacts Bali Ra. What does that mean? The nature of one, the existence, the reality of one impacts the other. So what's the idea of Bali Ra, as we said? Bali Ra is about the subjective, personal relationship to the Chametz as an object. Now, if I can't see it, and that's the way it's like mitzarif me to it, then I don't have that subjective personal relationship to it, let's say. But once I know I violate Bali Matse for this, I know now that I have a connection, a relationship to that object. Bali Matse is recreating sort of this reality. And once that's the case, then you can't ignore Bali Ra'e anymore. You can't ignore that Chametz anymore because Bali Ra'e is, the existence of Bali Matse is telling you you have a relationship and therefore you also violate Bali Ra'e now as a result. On its own, Bali Ra'e, you wouldn't be violating it. You wouldn't violate it. But because of Bali Matse, it expands what Bali Ra'e is. And I think it's a little bit, you know, I think this is just a good example of how to try to pin down what exactly does it mean that one impacts the other. Right, the fact that there is an existence of Bali Matse means that you have now a subjective relationship to the item as well. And this could be, you know, and this could go both ways, that maybe Bali Ra'e maybe could in theory limit Bali Matse, and so on and so forth, and Bali Matse really expands Bali Ra'e. But the idea is that the two impact each other in a substantive way, because even though in the end everything is, yeah, you're chayav for both in the end, right? You say nishtahin, nishtahir. But no, because of the existence of the nature of the mechayav and Bali Matse, you become chayav and Bali Ra'e. And I think that this really is, this is sort of the, like, this is the way to encapsulate what kind of the Rambam's approach is, that you sort of have this dialectic, right? Where, you know, they're unified but distinct, right? They're integrated but sort of still retain their own identity. And the fact that they are independent and retain their own identity impacts the other, right? The need, because you have the mechayev of one, it impacts the other. That's what I would say. That's my attempt to try to bring it down to maybe a more understandable level. Yeah, I think I saw at least one hand, Stephen. Yeah.
Maybe an example for the, when we apply this in the opposite direction is when we talk about matzah biyadcha. Yeah. Right. Even if something is matzoy, and it's like
you can buy it,
and it's on your property.
Maybe matzah biyadcha, the idea that you still can violate it, if you don't have access to it, is influenced by what you're at.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, it can go both ways. Yeah, exactly. Okay, great. All right, so that's what I wanted to say about this section. That's really the crux, the key points of this year. But then I want to finish off with this other issue, which I think is really interesting in the Rambam. And this is regarding the Rambam's count, the Rambam's statement that you get makos for violating Bali Ra'e Bali Matse. Now, the issue of whether it's one or two, that to me, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, I think that's actually less important here. The issue of Bali Ra'e Bali Matse, one or two. It does play a role, but that's kind of not the emphasis we're going to try to make here. Okay. Okay. So the Rambam let's just look at it one more time. We're good on time. We'll hopefully finish by 12, hopefully. So the Rambam here in Chametz Matzah Aleph Gimel says this line, right, of, I don't have the Rambam here. I have no idea. Yeah, the Rambam here says, "Ein Elokei Mishum Lo Yirav Lo Yimatze." You know, actually, let's start with B, because this is an important point. The Rambam has this idea of a Haminiach Chametz Bereshuso. What's the idea of a Haminiach? It's like this active, passive line. That the Haminiach is like more than just, okay, now there is Chametz in your Rishus. No, you're leaving Chametz in your Rishus. When you're leaving, you're not doing it. Haminiach, active, passive formulation. So that's one important point that we'll make sure I get back to later. But in Gimli says, "Ein Elokei Mishum Lo Yirav Lo Yimatse," and so it sounds like, oh, you don't get makos for it. Elim King Kana Chametz Pesach O Chimso Kedish Yasa B'Maisa, that you acquire Chametz Pesach, you're kone it, Rosai had something to say about that. But okay, Ochimso, you were made it into chametz. Or yeah, well, what exactly that means also we have to figure out. So, yeah. So that's the Rambam's comment. Now, the problem is, if you look at the Gemara Pesachim, Sadi Hey Amid Aleph, the Gemara refers to Bayar and Bayimatse as Alafa Nitak Lase. What's the most classic example of Bava Nitak Lase? So the most classic example is Vehishiv is Hagzela Sher Gazel. So you steal an item. We're not supposed to do that. That's a lav, right? And then the way to rectify that is the aseya vehishiv is agzela sher gazal. Meaning you're not supposed to do this a priori return a stolen object. That'd be insane because you're not supposed to steal in the first place. But if you do make this mistake, the way to rectify it is through vehishiv is agzela, returning the gzela. So that's a lav anita klase. Now the rule by lav anita klase is what regarding makos? Let's see. We can ask Eli Hyman. What's the rule regarding lav anita klase and makos?
That you don't get malko for it, except unless you're like mevatel the essay.
Yeah. So we're gonna. Yeah. So good. So that's a step ahead. But the basic rule is that lav anita klase you don't get makos for. Okay. Very important point. The Gemara says lav anita klase. The Rambam gets to the point where you might even get two makos for the Rambam. What? How does he get from one to the other? The Gemara's girsa, at least for the simple girsa of that of Rashi and Tosfos, is that it is lav anitak laaseh. Laaseh being tashbisu. The lav anitak is bali rabali matzeh. Now, the fact that the Rambam gets the makos is shocking. What it seems like from the Rambam is he gets the lav sheim bo maisa. Right, that you're not loka unless you do a maisa, because it's fundamentally it's a seemingly a lav sheim bo maisa. But what does Rambam do with lava? With the fact that it says lava nitak lase, right? So there's two ways to kind of it's not two ways. There's two potential sources for this. One is Rabbeinu Chananel actually has that girsa, even though it's clear that that's not the predominant girsa in the Rishonim. The Rabbeinu Chananel actually has that girsa. That's one. And the Rabbeinu Chananel is the Torah. He has an impact on the Rambam and the Rif, Rabbeinu Chananel. So the fact that okay. The second thing is there is a girsa in the Yerushalmi. There's a Tosefta, a Tosfta Kilayim that the Rambam actually quotes and references, where some people try to read that as saying that there it's a lav sheim bo maisa and not a lav anita klase. So maybe that's a different source the Rambam got it from. With that being said. And like this is always true in the Rambam, right? Like people say, this is where the Rambam got it from. But that's not enough. The Rambam got it from somewhere. Why did he choose to get it from those places? Right? There's Rashi, there's Tosfos. That's the style, the standard girsa and the Gemara's there. Why does the Rambam choose to follow this other tradition? And even in Tosefta, Vronsai was not into that. He didn't think that was a clear reading at all, that Tosefta. So that's one issue. Why does the Rambam choose to go this route of lav sheim bo maisa over the problem of lav anita klase? So here we presented three different approaches. We might have presented more than three different approaches, but I'm just going to present like the three, three key ones. So the first one is that's not really the first one presented, but I like this one. It's the Rav and the Shagas Aryeh. It's the Rambam held that for them, the rule of lav anita klase and not getting makos doesn't apply when you have two lavin and one ase. And because the ase doesn't address the lavin sufficiently. That's their idea. So then that's the Rambam by Timura says you get makos, even though it's a lav sheim bo maisa. But the idea is because the point was in Timura, he does it because there's a double formulation there, and so the one ase is not going to impact those two. But here they're saying that the Rambam here has two lavin, and if the Rambam has two lavin, the lavanita klase rule is going to fall apart because the ase is supposed to rectify the two lavin, and that doesn't that's not relevant here. This in general, like the reason why I think there's numerous explanations actually. I think one of them could be just Like in the Psukim, there is another explanation also, but the basic idea of Lavanita Glase, I believe, is that, you know, the Torah tells you how to rectify it. It's not through getting a punishment, it's through doing the assay. So that's why you don't need makos. But if the assay is not going to cover the other two, then you should get makos. And so that's the idea of the Rav and the Shagas Aryeh. Rav Chaim, and this is based on the whole issue of Yehuda and the Chachamim, says that we only say Labanita Klase when the assay is a kiyum in the Chefza, right? Because we know Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rav Chaim, who says you need Sreifa, the entire essence of Chiyuv Tashbisu is that the Chefza of Chametz needs to be obliterated. It's not the Chefza. But the Rabbanan who hold Hashpisaso B'chol Davar, that I think that the Chiyuv Tashbisu is a din in the Gavra, right? And it's about removing Chametz from one's vicinity. So if that Lavanita Klase is only when it's a din in the Chefza, then that's not helpful here, because what does the Rambam hold according to Rav Chaim? So you know the Rav Chaim holds it. The Rambam says like the Chachamim, and so therefore it's not a Lavanita Klase according to that. The question of whether how compelling that necessarily is, Rav Rosenzweig raised some issues, but we'll leave that aside. The third approach is Rav Rosenzweig's, that you need Lavanita Klase to occur at the same time. But here, that's not actually what happens, because when does the assay actually take place according to the Rambam? So the assay takes place for the Rambam before, because what does the Rambam say about Tashbisu? Tashbisu is kodem zman isuro. That's like the Rambam's idea, right? That Tashbisu takes place before the zman iser by Rabbi Matze. So if that's the case, then the Lavanita Klase doesn't occur simultaneously, and therefore it breaks the whole rule apart. And good. So that's the third way of dealing with it. A fourth way, and again, this is a good example just for learning, right, that a way of one of the Nosei Kalim picking up on an issue and highlighting the tension is that the Mishnah Lamelech just says the Rambam thinks that's not a Liba de Hilchasa, that Gemara. I mean, there's a clear issue, and the Rambam just thinks it's not a Liba de Hilchasa. Okay, good. That's another approach. I forget where that Mishnah Lamelech is. Probably in the probably Aleph Gimel, I imagine. So that's how the Rambam maybe gets away from Lavanita Klase, saying it's a Lav She'en Bo Maisa. But that's step one. Step two is once you get to Lav She'en Bo Maisa, you still don't get makos for Lav She'en Bo Maisa, right? So what do you do about that, right? The fact that you don't get makos for Lav She'en Bo Maisa. So here we get to, and by the way, there is a there is a Kiva Eger, which Rav Rosenzweig went into that I'm probably not giving enough credit to right now, but we'll hold off. So we'll hold off on that. So I think what Rav Rosenzweig's idea was the following, is that the Rambam, even though the Rambam in general, when he categorizes something as a Lav She'en Bo Maisa or Lav She'esh Bo Maisa, what the Rambam is really doing is that the Rambam is actually saying something very much more fundamental about it than you might think. Because I'm not sure if let me put it this way. I'm not sure if exactly this is the way Rav Rosenzweig formulated it, but I think like Rav Rosenzweig, basically his idea is that Bayar Matze is fundamentally, or in a sense, is equivalent to a Lav She'esh Bo Maisa. And so let me explain. I mean, the Rambam in general is very fundamental about how he decides to categorize something as Lav She'en Bo Maisa, Lav She'esh Bo Maisa. Yeah. So what's the best example from the Rambam for this? Someone's got to get this. What's the best example of the Rambam for this? Eli Hyman, I see this. Oh, Aaron Brooks. Please.
Lo Tachma.
Yeah, low taf mode. Why? What's significant about low taf mode?
The Rambam says you're not chayav until you do a maisa, but then he says you're not loka because it's a lav she'en bo maisa.
Yeah, and like low taf mode seems to be a pretty active thing, and that's what the Rambam goes crazy about at the Rambam for. But if you understand that, you need to do the kichas achefetz, right? So low taf mode is it's a maisa, but for I won't go into the whole idea, but like Lo Tachmo for Rosenzweig and the Rambam is that it's fundamentally Lav She'en Bo Maisa, because it's really about what's going on inside and not necessarily about the action. So the way the Rambam categorizes something is very significant. And so here, I think, again, the Rambam is categorizing it as a Lav She'esh Bo Maisa, or the even though really it's a lashi imbo maisa, and that's where the Rambam is getting it from. At its core, it's really a lashi ishbo maisa. Why? So if you have to look at v'haminiach, because even though v'haminiach, as you're leaving it, sort of like v'haminiach is like you're being like chametz is so toxic that by not, in a way, it's yeah. Like by not disposing of this terrible, awful, you know, anti Chag HaPesach entity from your house, it's like in a sense as if you're like you're leaving it there, and you're like guarding it in a way. That's what you're doing by leaving it there. And so now, technically, for v'haminiach, you can't be chayav. There's no action, right? Technically, you can't do that. But there's the point is that once you're able to get rid of that technicality, there's no action. Because having violating Bayar Bali Matze, having Chametz on Pesach is itself such an egregious violation. It's as if you are actively guarding it, you are actively leaving it there. So once you actually get over the line and have some sort of technical Maisa, then you're good. You've done a Maisa. This is you've fulfilled the Lav Sheishbo Maisa part of it in a sense, and now you get Makos for it. And that's the Rambam's idea. Right? Then this connects to everything we said about the Rambam being so fundamental and intense about Bayar Bali Matze. Is that Bayar Bali Matze and this whole notion of having chametz on Pesach is that it's so toxic, it's so anti-definitional to what it means to be come out as Jews and to be in the Ben Chor Mishal Isik B'Torah, to be under the Kanfei Ashchina. When you come out of the Mitzrayim experience, you're not supposed to be chametz, which represents unrestricted growth. If you have that in your house, you're doing something so terrible and devastating. And so it's as if you're actively taking a stance on the chametz by leaving it in your possession. And so really at its core, it's not a lav shi'im bo maisa. It's really a lav shi'ish bo maisa. And once you have a maisa, you're kone it, you're machmitz it, then you deserve makos for that as a result. I think that's the right way of putting it. Yeah. I think that's the right way of putting it. And so then here, just to highlight this with two nafkamina before we conclude. And we thank the Wine family for holding the fort down until now. So hopefully I'll stay that way a couple more minutes. Okay, so two other things. So here, I think that probably the most salient examples were Rabbeinu Manoach and Rabbi Akiva Eger. So Rabbeinu Manoach, so when he basically talks about, like, he says, you're like, you make chametz, right? That's what the, right. I don't have the Rabbeinu Manoach here, but the Rambam talks about, in the second example, after Konah, the Rambam says that you are making chametz. Yeah, what's the line? So we just have it clear. Ochimso, right? You caused the osa chametz. And so the question of the Rabbeinu Manoach is, well, what is the extent of that action, right? So do you have to actually like do something like really active? Like you need to be like mamish, the guy mixing it or into making it into the Isa, or is it just to kind of like leave the process and let it happen? Kind of just like putting the Seor into the Isa, that itself is like enough. Basically, do you need an intense action or you just need a very minute action? So if in general, the idea of like you needing a Maisa to get you out of Lav Sheim Bo Maisa is that without an action, you really, you know, without an action, like it's, you know, you really have a devastating gap and that's why you can't get Makos for it, then you probably need a more significant action here. But since having chametz in your home is such an egregious act unto itself, a haminiach, active, passive, to get over the line of making it into a maisa and needing mako, it's such a slim line. It's such a short gap between the two, a small gap between the two. So all you need is like a little thing together, the straw that breaks the camel's back. This is having chametz in your possession, we're ready to give you makos for it. It's just, you don't have that little, you need a little technical action. Once you have that little technical action, you're good. And I think like if you think about it this way, if the lack of an action is saying that you know the having a maisa is a reflection of the chomer ha'avera, so then without an action, it reflects the lack of chomer. So you really need an intense action. You don't need that by chametz. Chametz, you have a chomer ha'avera anyways. And so maybe if it's sort of a technicality, less will suffice. And that's what Rabbeinu Manoach decides, and it concludes. You don't really need more than that. So that's enough to trigger Malkos. I think that, and so I think that what I was saying is that, okay, the Maisa, if Rabbeinu Manoach is wrong, then that's a little extreme, right? That, and we require a higher standard, okay, fine. But the idea behind Rabbeinu Manoach is very compelling. And that's what Rosa was trying to say, that like the idea he's picking up on is very important. Again, this idea of the tension within the Nosi Kalim is very telling to us, right? Fine. The last example is Rabbi Akiva Eger. I just gave a shiur related to this, actually, in different contexts. Like by Amir Lenachri. Why is Amir Lenachri a problem on Shabbos? So Rashi says, because you're shlichus. The shlichus? What do you mean shlichus? The Gemara, a couple of places, says, ain't shlichus Lenachri. So we say that shlichus Lenachri lechumra, not the... the kula, meaning you can get in trouble for doing shlichus l'nachri. You can't have them do something, can't get you married, but they can cause you a problem of amir l'nachri on Shabbos. So here, let's say I send a non-Jew to buy chametz for me. So here, shlichus l'nachri is a shvach din, it's a lower din, it's only a din d'rabbanan, right? It's not, you know, it's like very, very weak. So Let's say you do that on Pesach. Should you violate Bayera Bayimatzeh? Is this Kone Chametz of Pesach? And I think it's the same idea that if the lack of Maisa is a reflection of the Chomer HaAveira, you know, Lashim of Maisa is missing a Maisa to make it a much more Chomer HaAveira, then you're not going to say that this is a valid, you know, this is a way of being violating Bayera Bayimatzeh and getting Makos. But if we say that it's, we don't need so much to get over the line. Having chametz in your home is already a maisa to an extent. V'hamini'ach, then maybe this would trigger bali matzeh and getting mako. So again, Avraham Sinai doesn't think you need to necessarily say these things, but if you do, it makes a lot of sense with the mahalach we've been developing. I'd also just throw in one last thing, which is that you know, for all of this, Rabbi Shmuel's din is very relevant. Like the notion of having these categories which impact each other, like everything kind of being a little different, tamun. Like Rabbi Shmuel's din is very relevant for all of this. And I think, you know, that's just important to point out. All right, so hopefully we got from, the Gemara says, Lava Nitak Lase. Rambam somehow gets to having maybe even two sets of makos for it, right? I mean, one or two, depending on the submission of the Rav Rosenzweig. How's Rambam get there? So it could be because he has a different girsa, or from the Tosefta, or Beinu Hananel, even so that's a little shvach, because why is Rambam choosing to be like those? So we have the Shagas Aryeh and the Rav, Rav Chaim, Rav Ronsag's explanation. Then we say, okay, great, you get to Lashim Bomaisa, but Lashim Bomaisa, you don't get Makos for it, you know. So he says, no, because really fundamentally, you know, we're close to Lashim Bomaisa, because having Chametz in your home is such an egregious act. And then we presented a couple other ideas for maybe how that could manifest practically. Okay, Shkayach, everyone. Thanks for coming. Yom Shavu Chag Kashi V'Sameach. Hopefully, all learning of Pesachim should enhance your Pesach experience. You know, I think, in general, deeper understanding leads to a deeper appreciation. So, I know certainly my Pesach will be uplifted by all our learning this year, and hopefully, the same for all of you.